Welcome to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life. My name is Tracy Crow. I'm an author, writing coach, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm looking forward to co-creating today's show with you. So if you're ready, are you ready? I'm ready. So if you're ready to live a more creative, more magical life, let's get started. This week, I have a little something different planned for you. Because so many of you have been inspired now to write after hearing Antoinette Toscano read a memoir excerpt she first developed in one of my writing workshops, I've decided to share with you a little about why I develop and lead these workshops. In other words, what I know firsthand about the power of self-reflective writing. And if you'll return Thursday, I'll share the exact method I use in my workshops for helping everyone find the stories of their lives. More importantly, this method helps you to remember certain aspects of yourself that perhaps you've forgotten, or perhaps you've buried under layers of trauma or drama or other stressors that happen to us over a lifetime. But let's start today's personal share with one of my favorite quotes by the late poet Maya Angelou. Quote, "There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you." Unquote. Don't I know it? For 15 years after I left the Marine Corps, I held tightly to a story that I was certain had to remain untold. You see, in 1987, after 10 pretty remarkable years that included a rapid rise in rank from enlisted to officer, as well as a couple of medals that touted professional accomplishments above and beyond the call of duty, I resigned my commission. And while I left the Marines with an honorable discharge, I left under conditions that felt, less than honorable to me. I suppose most of us have at some point left a job or even a relationship, wishing we'd left on different terms. This was certainly the case for me in 1987. And for nearly 15 years afterward, I continued to wrestle with an identity crisis and post-traumatic stress that made the transition from military service to the civilian workplace a challenging one. Despite the mask of command military veterans, especially women veterans, wear as a cloaking device to hide anything personal, especially the wounds of moral injury. Throughout those 15 years, the only time my military service came up for discussion was during job interviews. And during the 1990s, a woman who had been in the Marines was practically unhirable, at least in my case. Potential employers bemoaned how badly they wanted someone with my leadership experience on their team, but that their secretaries just wouldn't go for it. "They think you'll have them doing push-ups or running around the building during breaks." Please. But that's the way it was, for me anyway. So I found a home in sales with a cellular phone company during the era when cell phones had to be installed in your car and cost thousands of dollars. 6 months later, I was the sales manager of the largest team within the company, a year later with another company, and without a college degree. I was vice president of a cellular phone company with a ridiculous, elegant office and a high-rise office building with floor-to-ceiling views of downtown Atlanta. And I was miserable. Why? Well, because despite what appeared like the comeback of all comebacks, I was still wrestling with a past I kept trying to hide or outrun. For whatever reason, it never even occurred to me back then to seek professional help or to even write, despite my background as a journalist and my self-professed dream as a child to become a writer. Had anyone suggested writing back then to me, I would have likely answered, "Write what? You mean that story that will forever remain untold because of the anger, resentment, even shame I'm supposed to be carrying?" Huh, yeah, no, that story is the one I'm never going to tell anyone, ever, ever. You know, like never ever, got it? As it turned out, the joke was on me because years later, I found myself in a convenient financial position that allowed me to return to college for that degree I'd never been able to finish while I was a Marine in the 1980s, a time before the internet and online classes made it possible to finish a degree despite deployments or changes in duty stations. So there I was at 41, a college sophomore at a private liberal arts college in Florida, majoring in creative writing. At the same time, my daughter Morgan was a sophomore at a university in South Carolina, majoring in mass communications and theater. So one of my creative writing classes, as it turned out, had to be nonfiction, and the only available nonfiction class at the time was a memoir class taught by Professor Helen Wallace. Now, let me stop here to tell you a little about Helen. Helen is the personification of all that is pure and poetic. She laughs easily, especially at herself. She's encouraging, absolutely brilliant with her delivery of insightful feedback, and the sort of woman I imagine we all wish to be like when we grow up. By the way, Helen is probably younger than I am. Anyway, in the years since, I have modeled my teaching style in workshops after Helen's, and I am forever grateful for the example she set. But I'm also grateful to Helen for opening a door that I'd long ago shuttered and deadbolted with at least 100 locks, all the keys hidden in places I'd conveniently forgotten, which was just fine with me. So, one night after memoir class, during which it had been my turn to receive feedback on a short essay, and the feedback from my peers less stellar than what I'd hoped to hear, Helen and I were walking together to the parking lot. Along the walk, she talked about the memoir piece I'd submitted. It was an attempt to write about the relationship with my grandmother, the level of unconditional love I'd experienced my entire lifetime with this special woman right up until the final months of her life, which was just a month or so before the first draft of this essay I'd submitted. The essay had been my attempt to reconcile the recent heartbreaking deterioration of our incredibly special relationship with the deterioration of my grandmother's mental, emotional, and physical bodies. But I hadn't come at all close to capturing any of this, and so Helen explained on our walk that night toward our cars in the parking lot that it's often too difficult to write about recent experiences because we haven't had time to process them, and that in time I would find the real story in all that with my grandmother. But then, Helen said, out of the blue, "Did I hear you were in the Marine Corps?" And my heart stopped. I must have said yes at some point, or maybe her question was rhetorical, because I only remembered what came next, which was, "Why aren't you writing about this in my class?" As far as I knew back then, I was the only adult student at our little college who was a military veteran. But as I've said before, veterans, especially women veterans, often remain cloaked behind a mask of command. And all this was before the spring up of supportive student veterans associations on campuses around the country. So to Helen's question, I muttered something like, "Helen, This is a liberal arts college. Who is going to care about my 10 years in the Marine Corps? Helen's next question was this. Why did you get out after 10 years? Ugh. There it was. The very question I had successfully avoided for at least 15 years. Now, by avoiding, I mean lying. I'm sorry to say that had you asked me why I left the Marines after 10 years, I would have lied to you to save face for both of us. But there we were, Helen and I, alone and in a very dark parking lot, except for a streetlight that suddenly felt like a cone of light from God. I couldn't lie this time, not to this person, not to Helen Wallace. Nobody lies to Helen Wallace. And so out poured the truth. A few minutes later, after I'd emptied myself before her, I steeled myself against the shame that wanted to choke the life out of me. Helen, her eyes widening to absorb all this truth, leaned closer, and she wrapped a hand around my forearm. And then Helen Wallace, pure and poetic Helen Wallace, yanked my arm hard and shouted, "You have to write about this! You will write this story for my class next week!" "But Helen," I heard myself say, "I can't write that story, not that story. You will write this story," she said. And since that was the closest to an actual order I'd heard since leaving the Marines 15 years earlier, I went to work. Only I couldn't write that story, not yet. So on the drive home that night, I decided I'd write something about my military story, just not that story. And Thursday, I'll share with you the exact method. But now, let me fast forward to what happened a few years later, after I'd written and revised enough stories to complete a book-length memoir. Let me take you back to April Fool's Day, 2012, the official release date of my memoir, Eyes Write, Confessions from a Woman Marine. Okay, it was a Monday, and I received a text at 7 a.m. from my mother, who had just learned to text a few days before. Her text was something like, "Tracy, wake up. You're the lead story on AOL. I jumped from that bed as if my heart was responding to two cups of espresso with a Red Bull chaser. I looked at AOL HuffPo, and sure enough, there I was, the worst photograph ever taken of me with giant 1980s glasses, and I was one of the lead stories, or the release of my memoir was, and under the most salacious headline you can imagine. I quickly sent a text to my daughter, Morgan, who was living 3 time zones away in Los Angeles. "Honey, just a heads up," I typed. "Your mom is the lead story today on AOL. An immediate text popped back. 4:01 a.m. now. "I know. I've already heard from Dad." Her father, my ex-husband, lived in Dallas and had gone in early to work that morning. Now, imagine his surprise as he had fired up his computer and there was the photographic image of his ex-wife, in fact, a photo that he himself had taken while the two of us were stationed years earlier in Okinawa. You see, her father hadn't known I'd written a book. I'd changed his name, and in 2012, you'd have had to hire a detective to trace all the married names I'd taken and discarded since I'd discarded his, and so I'd covered all the bases for reasonably ensuring his privacy. Within minutes of these texts, I began receiving texts from my college students with the resounding advice, "Whatever you do, Tracy, don't read the comments. Don't read the comments." The story was gaining traction, thanks to that salacious headline, and it seemed to be going viral. A few hours later, even the Daily Mail had emailed for an interview. A girlfriend called to say she hoped I had something to wear on the Today Show. No, and I also have classes to teach this week, I said. Throughout the day, my students seemed to feel it their duty to keep me informed about the growing number of negative comments, already in the hundreds, and I was beginning to wonder if this might be my last day as an assistant professor here. Would I be hearing next from the college president, the chair of the English department? That night was the student newspaper all-nighter, and occasionally one of my student editors would pause production to write a positive comment to the AOL HuffPost storm that was gathering force at the bottom of my memoir excerpt. Sometime around 4 a.m., we finished the paper, emailed the PDFs to our publisher, and went home. They shouted as we departed in the parking lot, "Don't read the comments, Tracy." So I drove home, and once I was home, I read the comments. In fact, I read every single one of them. Every single negative, slut-shaming comment. So many of them filled with anger, all sorts of vitriol, that it pulled at my heartstrings for them. And you know, not one of their comments triggered me. Not one of them triggered a single emotional response that you would have considered on my behalf. And here's why. They were reacting to a version of me who no longer existed. You see, I'd already made peace with that younger version of Tracy. I'd already forgiven her for all the missteps, and more importantly, through self-reflective writing that revealed patterns established in childhood, I understood the motivations or intentions behind her missteps, and I loved her even more because of them. So, this was when I truly understood and realized the power of self-reflection through writing. And I'm referring to the level of writing that encourages us to uncover the meaningful patterns within our lives. And this is why I'm so passionate about sharing my writing methods with others, especially with those who are suffering from trauma, moral injury, self-worth issues, addictions. And if you'll return Thursday, I'll share how simple the process actually is. No matter what you'd like to know better about yourself or what you'd like to know better about the fictional characters, maybe you're creating for a short story or novel, this is the tried and true method. Now, seriously, if you're ready to learn more about you, wonderful you, and I'm talking about the unique expression of light and love that you are, then return Thursday. And I'll share how easy it is to get started. Of course, the lifting of the veil and the peeking underneath it will require courage, and it will produce a few tears. But hey, what are a few tears along the wondrous journey of remembering your true self and why you're even here? Isn't it time to remember? Come on, let's do this together. And by the way, within a few weeks of that AOL HuffPo release, women around the world were emailing to thank me for having the courage to share my story. Their story, they said. Because I'd given them my story, they had received their own. And along with it, the validation they'd been so desperately searching for and needed. Several, I'm happy to report, have gone on to write their own stories since. You see, we can do this because everyone has a story, and a story that matters. I hope you enjoyed today's co-creative listening experience. Please remember to leave a comment about the single greatest takeaway for you today. You know, that one thing you will remember from this day forward. Was it something funny or provocative? Was it just what you needed to hear? Please share so we can all benefit. And remember to return Tuesdays and Thursdays to accept your gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life.